before I started seminary, a friend made a powerful and courageous request. Alan and I had met at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Corvallis, where we were both members, and we got to know each other when we served together on the nominating committee. He was a geologist and a teacher, an avid cyclist, mountain climber, and hiker. He and his favorite wife, as he loved to call her, had ridden their bikes across Europe and the U.S. They had skied across glaciers in Alaska. He wrote frequently for the venture section in the newspaper. And then, at the age of 58, when he started having difficulty with his balance and strength, he was diagnosed with ALS. He asked several of his friends, including me, if we would be his spiritual Sherpas for his last journey. He knew that he would move through at an unknown pace toward the end of his life, traveling a path with an unknown terrain. There is no map for those diagnosed with ALS. There is no predictable way that it progresses, but there is a known ending point. And so while Alan had no map that he was so used to using for this final journey, he did approach his dying in the same way that he approached his life, with honesty, with tears, with laughter, and with trust. Each of us will die someday. It is quite likely that it may not be because a physician did something wrong, that there was a clinical error. While that does happen, the reality is that we will all die, regardless of the medical care that we receive, unless something happens vastly different in the coming years. Yes? Okay. I mean, there's inevitability, and then there's who knows, right? Yeah. And yet, while we may know this cognitively, most of us don't behave as though we know that it is true. We have emergency forms that we've filled out for our children so that people know who to contact in case they're ill or injured. But many adults don't have anything similar for themselves. For instance, if you needed to go to the hospital, who would you want to have contacted? Would you want someone to call the ministers? Does anyone know that? Many of us understand that a will and an advance directive are a really good idea. But maybe you, like me, have not yet taken the time, care, and thought to put your wishes down on paper or had the necessary conversations with family members or friends. For the things that fall into the trying to avoid the inevitable category in my own life, where does this resistance come from? Well, we could gain some insight into that resistance by listening to Keith Chen, a behavioral economist who wanted to understand why countries with similar economic systems have very different attitudes and practices about saving for the future. What he learned is that language, or the languages we speak, shape the way we think about time, as well as a number of other things. For those of us whose primary language is English, our language and grammatical structure requires us to be very aware of if we're talking about something that has happened, or is happening, or will happen, because verbs are conjugated differently based on time. In contrast, a person speaking Mandarin can correctly say that it rained yesterday, it rained now, and it rained tomorrow. This means that linguistically, the present is not separate from the future. Do you notice how it might even be hard to imagine that? Anybody like going, huh? What? Our brains are so used to organizing things based on time. Some languages are defined as futureless. Not that there is no future, but that the language and grammatical structure doesn't make distinctions based on time. There are people who live in cultures that are quite different from one another, such as Finland and China, but whose primary languages are both futureless. And they save more money, lead healthier lifestyles, and are more likely to discuss death than their futured language counterparts. I'm guessing that they file for fewer extensions on taxes and other paperwork as well. Our avoidance and resistance to what is happening can show up in other ways as well. In 1976, Rebecca Parker, who is now the retired president of Star King School for the Ministry, began a cross-country trip on her way to seminary. She was traveling with a friend. It was an adventure, and they had time, so they took back roads. One rainy afternoon, they drove through rural Pennsylvania, down through hill country into a valley. As they neared a small town, they noticed blinking yellow lights, warning of danger. They passed fields that were covered in water, and several side roads were blocked off with signs saying, "Road closed." "Wow, looks like they had a flood here," they said. A little further on, they crossed a bridge, and the river was fast and high and muddy. There were sandbags lining the road. Whew, they must have had quite a bit of high water. Look at all the water that's still left. They headed out of town following a winding country road, relieved to have missed what was clearly a pretty serious flood. Then they rounded a bend to find a sheet of water covering the roadway. And the water was rising fast. They stopped and tried to turn the car around, but the water was rising behind them as well. Suddenly, they realized that the flood hadn't happened yesterday or last week. It was happening right there and then. They had misinterpreted all the signs. Just to know, they were able to get out of their car, go to higher ground. They were safe, very scared. Similar stories could be told about many of our responses to the loss of species and the impact on ecosystems caused by human activity. We can be confronted with all the signs that catastrophe is happening, yet we keep on moving ahead without significantly changing course. It has been said that if tomorrow morning we awoke to an aggressive alien invasion, we would be outraged. We would be furious if alien beings contaminated our water and soil, blew the tops off of mountains, melted glaciers, and poured pollutants into the air, leading to extinction of species, hurricanes, tornadoes, floods, and tsunamis. We'd be pissed. We would do whatever we could to protect ourselves and our planet. We might even expect to see our elected officials making statements saying, "We will find whoever did this." And yet, most of us, myself included, are a bit more like frogs in a pot of water that is getting hotter. We don't seem to notice the danger that we are in. Or maybe we feel concerned and really hope that things will get better without it being too much of an inconvenience. After all, we've changed to energy-efficient light bulbs, maybe we've even changed the car we drive, or opt to walk or ride a bike whenever possible. Maybe we've changed what we eat. Isn't that enough? Now, I happen to know that just yesterday, volunteers and staff replaced 90 light bulbs here at UUSS. This is not to discourage us from doing that, okay? And the climate change statistics would say that whatever we are doing is not yet enough, that much more is needed, and soon, maybe even yesterday. Where do we think we're going? Kathleen Dean Moore, an author, professor, and activist, is calling the general lack of response to climate chaos a failure of reverence and a betrayal of love. A failure of reverence and a betrayal of love. There is a spiritual cost to all this avoidance. Avoidance of the future, avoidance of the present. The cost is a general sense of overwhelm, of apathy, and isolation. That is why I am particularly grateful for this faith that reminds us regularly of the awesome, beautiful, curious, and precious interconnected web of which we are one small part. I am grateful for this community and other congregations that offer me inspiration, challenge, and connection. I want to live as though I know deep in my bones that our history, our present and our future is one flowing story and not as separate as our language might require. That each of us can be an active participant, not a passive observer, as the story unfolds. I want us to know that none of us needs to face whatever we are facing alone. May we live each day knowing that we are dying so that we do not squander the lives that we have been miraculously given. May we choose to live with reverence and with love. Amen. Salam. Shalom, namaste, and blessed be.